Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 115 of Season 8 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week is Bubbly from so many different things, but it's Time to Rewind podcast.
Hello again.
One that pops into my head right now, but... Also, lyrical innuendo. There you go. We didn't talk about that all week.
Yeah, I was saving it for Friday because that's when it's normally releases.
Ah, there you go. Okay, that's good. So I've given a little bit of a spoiler for later. Why not? All right. So minute 115 begins with Miller explaining to Jackson his idea. And ends with everyone continuing to discuss the inventory. So basically, the Miller is making a plan with everybody, you know, trying to figure out what they're going to do because you know it's already a given that they're going to be staying here to fight it out with these men. Even though what's very interesting is that. They don't know that, you know, when the German army is expected to come. It could be that they're going to be there, you know, in an hour. It could be they're going to be there in a week. You know, so it to me, it's a little strange, you know, when you think about it, that they've made this decision to stay there with Ryan. But, you know, are they giving themselves a time limit? Are they going to say, okay, well, if they're not here within 3 days, we're leaving? Or is it however long it takes?
Well, it's until they have reinforcements. You know, if the Germans come first, then they're going to attack the Germans. And if the Allies come first and you know, the I forget the term that they use, the relief, you know, if the relief comes, then there's enough men to hold it. Then they would be available to bring Ryan home.
But they don't know how many men – they don't know when the relief is supposed to get there. I mean, Henderson thinks – you know, Henderson, you know, made the comment last week that, you know, I'm going to put in a complaint if you're my – you know, if you six guys are the ones who are coming to you know, to relieve us. But, you know, that we know is not what's happening. So – but, it, you know – I like the way that part of the conversation between Mike and Miller is, okay, this is a good thing to do. This is the right thing to do. This is going to, you know, Saving Private Ryan will earn us the right to go back home. That's a great concept and a great idea. But on the other hand, wait a second. These guys have a mission they need to fulfill, and they're indefinitely putting it off. It's not as if they're... You know, they don't know when the relief is supposed to show up. It's not like the relief is supposed to show up by X amount of time. I mean, I don't know how much you know about the history of D-Day and the days following it. There was so much chaos around that area that nobody could know exactly when, you know, when a relief is supposed to be coming. I mean, when we had the scenes with Hamill, you know, Hamill didn't have any information. He wanted Miller to give him information as to what's going on in the outside world. You know, that type of thing. It's an interesting way to look at it that, you know, I never even thought about it till right now. This is the first time I've even thought about the fact that you know, delaying doing their mission sort of, you know, without a hard deadline is pretty strange.
Although, but I mean, at the same time, they didn't know how long their mission was going to take. I mean, if the Minnesota Ryan was the correct Ryan, their mission would have been over in just a few days.
Correct. I mean, again, we know that the final day of this mission is the 14th. I believe the 14th of June is the day that you know, we see on the gravestone at the end of the movie. So. You know, and they started their mission on June 9th. So it's only a total of 5 days, you know, the entire trek that these guys are on. But it, you know, again, as Mike said earlier in the movie, it's like finding a needle in a stack of needles. You know, that's what it comes down to with the whole thing. So I don't know. It's a little interesting to think about it from that perspective. I guess you know, I guess Miller knows what he's doing. So Miller explains to Jackson that he wants him to go up into a tower, and Jackson says, "Yes, sir." And he goes, "Give you a little company if you need it." And he goes, "Yes, sir. Some company couldn't hurt. I'd say a 30 caliber without 100 with 1,000 rounds would be okay." And then Henderson turns to Parker and goes, "Parker, job opportunity." And then the answer that he gets from Ryben, who's finally saying something, he hasn't said something in a few days. Ryben goes, "Yeah, well, it's not the worst idea ever, Captain. It's just that everything depends on getting the tank down the main road for us to knock out, right? But how the hell do you plan on doing that?" And then Horvath turns around and goes, "Ryben's right. As our esteemed colleague from the airborne pointed out, what we got here are a bunch of spitwads. So how do we keep the tank if we get it to commit? How do we stop the tank if we get it to commit?" And you know, this is a great walk and talk with the way that they're doing this. I don't know if you've noticed, and you know, you know, it goes back to Aaron Sorkin, the walk and talk that they're doing. They're walking through parts of this bombed out town. Talking about these various things. But did you notice that there's a whole bunch of signs on the wall, like near where they're walking? Did you happen to notice any of those?
Yeah, I caught those like direction signs.
Yes, that's right. So they have the direction signs, and the first one that we see there is on top. It says Saint Lô. And Paris, it's off to the right. Underneath that, Cherbourg, off to the right. Off to the left is Perrier, which is 7 kilometers. You know, to the left. Now, do you have any idea what Perrier is?
No, I don't. Just based on how it sounds, I would think it's the water, but the water uses 2 R's. Well, I guess 3 R's if you count
Right, that's true.
but 2 R's next to each other in the middle.
Sure. So it's a little community in the Manche area of Normandy in northwest France, right? The irony is that this little town was only liberated on July 27th, 1944. So you know, here we are. You know, as we just said, today's probably like the 13th or 14th of June. They still have another month and a half till they Perrier is going to be liberated. Do you know approximately how many people live in this little town?
I mean, it just describing it as a little town in France, my guess would be, maybe a couple thousand people.
And you would be correct. The latest census that was done in 2022 in that area shows that there are 2,355 people that are living there. So it's a pretty small little town that you know, like I said, is part of the Manche region of Normandy. And you know, that's only 7 kilometers away, which I think is great because we know that Rommel is a fake place, you know, but to still give us the fact that you know, Perrier is relatively close. You know, anyone who's familiar with the area, I wonder if they're able to say, "Oh, well, 7 kilometers from Perrier is right here," and that's what, you know, they'd point on the map and say, "This is what we know about the, you know, that's where I don't know, some other French name appears." You know, that type of thing. You know, I probably should have done like a Google Map search. You know, like what's 7 kilometer perimeter around Perrier? You know, what it could be. Now, did you notice the sign below that one, the Perrier?
I mean, I'm looking at it, 30 kilometers, all wheat, allure.
Now, do you know what all air means?
And I know, I remember a tout à l'heure is, I'll see you later, I believe.
Okay, it could be. I don't know. I mean, this one I know is what the translation is. It's being on time, prompt, punctual, things like that, which makes no sense whatsoever. That's the name of a. I mean, maybe it's also a name of a. Maybe it's also a name of a town. I wasn't able to find the name of the town, but it's just very interesting. Basically, saying 30 kilometers punctually. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, or maybe that's the name of the street. No, that wouldn't make sense either. I have no idea. I wasn't able to figure out what it is. It's just very strange. I mean, and also the graffiti below that is also very strange. I mean, it looks to me like a picnic table. I don't know.
Or an A with the the crossbar in the middle of the A is an arrow pointing to the right.
Correct. And then there's a P below it with a VP, which I don't know what that could mean. But also, I mean, you pointed out yesterday about the production design and everything like that. I mean, it's amazing. You see all the bullet holes on all the these bombed out buildings, stuff like that. You really get the impression that there was a huge firefight that took place here. And it's just so fascinating to look at from that perspective. You know, the way that they show that. You know, and the camera follows them really well also through the building, from one side to the other and everything like that. And you can also see as when they come out of the building on the other side, you see a sign across the street for a store. And did you see what it said there?
Yeah, it's like vis liqueurs.
Right, Vins Liqueurs.
Vins.
That's right. And Miller's looking around as he's talking, mentioning, looking out for, is this a good place for us to be doing this? Everyone else is just walking around, somewhat, just following the ideas that Miller is giving them as to what's needed here. But the big question that they're trying to figure out is how do you convince the tank to follow them into this middle street? And Miller's response is, give it a rabbit to chase. Now, do you have any idea what that means?
Well, I imagine that that terminology comes from like dog racing that has the mechanical rabbits like that they set off for the dogs to chase.
Okay, that is part of it, but basically a rabbit is a informal term for something that happens in a race, but it's called the pacemaker or the pace setter. Okay, you have it also in marathons and things like that, where it's a runner who leads a middle or long distance running event for the first section to ensure a high speed and to avoid excessive tactical racing. Pacemakers are frequently employed by race organizers for world record attempts with specific instructions for lap times. Some athletes have essentially become professional pacemakers, a competitor who chooses the tactic of leading in order to win is called a front runner rather than a pacemaker. So the idea is the person who keeps the pace along the way. Now, again, with what you said about dog racing, it makes 100% sense because they do have a like a fake rabbit that's there for them to chase after in order to try to make the greyhound races go much quicker, I guess, or be more effective, something like that. But I also found that there's a term called rabbiting. Do you know what rabbiting is?
I feel like I've heard it before, but I can't pull it right now.
Okay, rabbiting is actually just another term for rabbit hunting or cottontail hunting. So it means that Elmer Fudd is a rabbiter. And usually people use either ferrets or dogs to try and catch and track their prey. Sometimes they have ways of trapping them or shooting them and things like that. I just thought it was very interesting that that is called rabbiting. Never heard of that phrase beforehand. It seems a little too simplistic to want to use that as what are you doing tomorrow? I'm going out rabbiting. Sounds much better when Elmer Fudd says I'm going out rabbit hunting, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the conversation continues and Millinet says, well, we can hit the tank on the tracks. Yeah, but with what? Well, we could try a sticky bomb. Ryan looks at him and goes, sticky bomb, sir? Sir, are you making that up? He goes, no, it's in the field manual. You can check it out if you want to. We seem to be out of field manual, sir. Perhaps you can enlighten us. All right, you have some demolition, don't you? Some TNT or some composition B? Yeah, that, sir, is the one thing we've got plenty of. And then the conversation ends in the middle because of that. But people are going to have to come back on Monday to find out exactly what it is that they're going to be doing with these sticky bombs. But what do you know about a sticky bomb?
I mean, I only know the only thing I know about it is as it's described in the movie, which is just a bomb that sticks.
Actually, a real sticky bomb is different than what they were using it for in this movie. So the original sticky bomb, it was a glass sphere that contains an explosive made of nitroglycerin, and basically it was like a grenade. You'd pull a pin on the handle and the casing would fall away and expose the sticky sphere. Pulling another pin would arm the firing mechanism, and the user would attempt to attach the grenade to an enemy vehicle. Letting go of the handle would release a lever that would activate a 5 second fuse, which would then detonate the nitroglycerin compound. So, the idea is that it's truly a grenade that will stick to a vehicle, as opposed to what they do here, which spoiler for anybody who can't wait the weekend to listen to it to find out. The idea is you dip your socks in what do they say,
Axe grease.
axle grease, and then because it gets sticky, you just place it right on the treads, and it'll explode. So, it's just an interesting idea to use it. So I guess if it's a good thing they didn't look it up in the field manual, because the field manual will tell them that it's something completely different than what Miller's about to explain to them. Sticky bomb is there, but that this isn't the sticky bomb what we're going to be doing. It's interesting the way that they show that and explain it.
It's an improvised sticky bomb.
Yes, apparently. That's pretty much how this minute ends. I love the way that this conversation goes though, because they're once again, Spielberg is using this as exposition to explain to us what's going to be happening, what they're going to do. He's setting it up for us.
And I also like how, over the course of these past few minutes, as Miller is explaining his plan, basically the crowd surrounding him is getting larger and larger. And at the end of this minute, as he's, getting, close to the end of his plan, he has, over a dozen people, more or less in a circle listening to him, call out the plan.
Exactly. Okay, so did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute or about the movie in general?
No, I don't think so. The only thing that I'm kind of disappointed in is that I don't really get any minutes with Upham, who is definitely a character that stood out to me a lot more on this watch than it did in previous watches. But yeah, it's a great movie. I am it Spoiler alert, it probably will be another 10 years before I come back around to it again. But I did enjoy watching it again this time. It's very entertaining, enjoyable, and and it's a powerful movie. It has a lot of great characters, and all of the characters have these arcs to them. I mean, maybe not Caparzo because he didn't get much time, but all the rest of them have
Well, the arc that
so
he
many.
has is that he's reminded of his niece. Maybe.
But all the rest of them definitely have, we get a lot of character beats out of them, and we really get a feeling for all of these characters, even though only two of them end up surviving from the original eight. And then I think Matt Damon does a good job of coming in here towards the end and making a name for himself, and again, kind of in a way like mirroring Miller in a handful of ways that I think does lend credence to the kind of bait and switch almost from the old man wondering whether it's a story about Miller or if it's a story about Ryan. And I think he kind of pulls off, but he has a lot of the same character, a lot of similar character traits as Miller, for as someone who would prefer to do something to make a difference to help win the war than to go run off and do what he would prefer doing, to follow orders and do the mission. He would rather do the thing that has the most impact at the moment, which in this case, it's saving. Holding one of the only two bridges left on this tactical position.
For sure. Okay, great. So every Friday, we have a segment called Filmmaker Friday, where my guests will give their top five Steven Spielberg directed films. So, Bubba, once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
All right, so I think my number five, which actually is a comic book adaptation. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I did really enjoy his adaptation of The Adventures of Tintin. I thought that was a really great movie, and I'm disappointed that if that we're not likely to see that series continue, which
Probably not.
I would have liked to have seen that, but I don't know if Peter Jackson can get away from the Lord of the Rings, and maybe he'll come back to Tintin one day. My number four is Minority Report. I love that movie. It's such an interesting take on the future, and adapted from the Philip K. Dick story. Tom Cruise and the precogs, and in some ways it's ridiculous future tech. Like I can't imagine how tired your arms would be dealing with his computer screen where you're like moving your hands all over the place, the gesture. But at the same time, like the targeted ads is very much very prescient. And then my number three is Catch Me If You Can. I brought it up on the John Williams, but I love this movie. Christopher Walken, two mice fell in a pot of cream, and one mouse gave up and died. The other mouse struggled so hard that he made butter and saved himself. Not exactly word for word. It's been too long since I've seen it, but
It's a nice impression.
it... my number two is Jurassic Park. Again, that's
You're once again
such a
making
great,
me happy.
yeah. Love that movie. It holds up so well. And my number one is Raiders of the Lost Ark. That is actually a movie that I rewatched within the past couple of years. I started going through the Indiana Jones movie, although I fell off before I hit Last Crusade, which I really want to circle back around because it's been ages since I've seen Last Crusade. But Raiders is fantastic, and I mean, not telling anybody anything they don't already know, but that's my number one.
Okay, that is a great list. So, Bubba, why don't you once again tell everyone where they can find you?
Well, like you've mentioned a few times, I've got a lot of pots on the fire, so to speak, and the one of the last podcast projects that I haven't really spoke about yet is my podcast Lyrical Innuendo. And every other Friday, me and my co-host Nick Rehak, which you had earlier this season, what we do is we pick a song. Basically, we typically alternate. One episode he'll pick, and the next one I'll pick. Whenever we don't have a guest, and we'll choose a song, and we will, do a deep dive into the lyrics, and talk about what they're obviously about, and what they're metaphorically about, and we tend to come up with our own theories about what the lyrics are really saying. And we usually divide it into one of three categories and decide whether the song is really about sex, drugs, or rock and roll. And based on the name Lyrical Innuendo, we often choose songs that are about sex. And it's a lot of fun, and it's kind of my one rated explicit podcast. So we do occasionally get dirty on there in some of our interpretations of the lyrics. It's a lot of fun. I love talking with Nick. He's a great co-host, and it's just a good time.
All right, that's I can vouch. I'm a big fan of of that podcast. So nice to know, but I have to wait because I don't have Spotify, so I have to constantly wait till the non-Spotify episode comes out without the song.
Well, actually, Spotify has they dropped their music and talk feature. So now I do just release the episodes kind of as is, and I just do a 30-second clip of the song, at least just with fingers crossed that hopefully we don't get they don't come after us for copyright infringements. That's a 30-second clip is fair use enough for us to use.
Okay. Good luck with that. I won't I won't rat on you. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Instagram, you can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Bubba, thank you very much for joining me once again this season. It's been very entertaining and educational. Hopefully, you've enjoyed it too.
Yeah, been a lot of fun.
All right. And I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, everyone have a great weekend and earn this.
Earn it.
My solitude, you haunt me with reverence. gone by.